assist. Pass ahead. J.R. Smith makes the catch. Bags a triple. Another Washington timeout. Green. Great pass to Nance. Floating in the lane and jams it with two hands. James covering Beal. And now driving down the lane is Mahinmi. One to shoot in the corner. Oubre for three. Hits it right at the shot clock horn. Kelly Oubre. Bradley Beal stops the dribble on top, gives to Porter, fires a three, and hits. Otto Porter Jr., cold as ice there. It's a nine-point game. So here comes James with a minute 17 to go. Head of steam down the lane, off the glass and in. 12 straight points for LeBron James. It's a three-point game. Beal quickly fires to Porter. Hit as he scores. Porter scoring a huge bucket, and Cleveland calls for time with the Wizards going up five.
We can be really good. We got 20-plus games left to try to figure it out. It's going to be very challenging, you know, but I accept the challenge, and I think the guys are excited about, you know, just trying to learn every day. You know, now we're going to get to a point where we're playing every other day so we can learn on the floor. But when we have our film sessions, when we have our walkthroughs, we got to continue to keep our mind sharp because that's all we have. We have to lean on that. We're not like Washington. We're not like Toronto. You know, obviously Boston got some, you know, new guys. They're figuring it out as well. But we're not like a lot of the teams where we can just hang our hats on our chemistry and how long we've been together.
It's bad. You know, there's a repairing of a relationship. This had been a tremendous partnership. I mean, Kawhi Leonard had become, you know, from the 15th pick in the draft, he'd become finals MVP there, two-time first-team All-League, two-time All-Defensive Player of the Year, and a player who this year was a lot of people's, you know, potential front-runner for MVP. You know, the injury and the rehab to this right quad, it's just taken on a life of its own. It is an unusual situation, and it is unusual for a Spurs organization that has, you know, traditionally had very strong relationships and connections with its players.
The Western Conference has been pushing for this for years. They could get 15 votes today among all the Western Conference teams to seed at 1 through 16. But they need a supermajority. That's 23. So you'd have to get 8 of the Eastern Conference teams to go along with it. There's much more support for that. But that's still a ways away to be able to do that.
And now, with 15 seconds to go in the game, Rodgers has the basketball, and we're tied at 46. And Lewis will trigger the inbounds pass under the rim basket. They'll bounce it in the corner. Christian Smith, he'll drive in, lay it up, and get it to go! With 10 seconds to go in the game, Lewis has himself 18 points. Here's a triple try, boom! At the buzzer! The Stark Spartans have come back, and they win the city championship on a three-pointer at the buzzer by Brandon Perry.
College basketball is already in trouble. We used to love the season. Now all we seem to care about is March Madness. And any time further negative publicity comes down the pike, it doesn't help the sport, particularly when some of the big names, who are the kind of individuals that are so revered by the media and the public at large, if they start falling like dominoes too, who knows what this is going to do to college basketball. I think this is the tip of the iceberg. I'm not surprised at all. And the people who get implicated, make no mistake about it, because the FBI is involved, they're going to start singing.
Welcome to the Bob Plants Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are and continue to be Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding day. How about the buzzer beater in the City League Championship game last night? Unbelievable. Great call by the great Bill Clark. Thanks to Jim Cushlin for throwing that into the montage amongst all of the other tremendous news stories we're going to talk about on a free-for-all Friday. It's free-for-all, but we kind of have a little bit of a plan here. You know, we try to make it free-for-all, but sometimes we do have a little plan we're going to follow, and part of that includes having Eddie Meissonette, who will be joining us from SportsFanJournal.com from Los Angeles, and also from Fox Sports. That'll be at about 4:10 to talk about all things NBA in the second half of the season, which opened up last night. And then at 4:40, we are heavy on high school, really, the last 2 days. Yesterday, we spent a great deal of time talking about Cardinal Stritch and their first ever TAC championship. We talked to the coach and a couple of players. Today, we'll get more of a lowdown on the area as a whole as we head into sectional play as a part of the district tournaments. And Bill Clark, the voice of high school sports, will join us, which takes us back to last night. And what a great call by Bill Clark, a game you heard right here on the ticket. The City League Championship decided on a buzzer beater. That was outstanding. We'll talk a little bit more with Bill about that, but that's just what it's all about. Rodgers had a 48-46 lead after that bucket by Christian Smith with 10 seconds to go. And this is always seems to be, you know, sometimes, Jim Cushion, I know you're with us, sometimes I think this is the way to go. And I say that it might sound like Monday afternoon quarterbacking now, right, or Monday morning quarterbacking because it's already played out or hindsight. But so many times when you've got, say, less than 10 seconds or less than 6 seconds or whatever, and you need a bucket right now and you've got a timeout, the coach calls timeout. And, of course, the reason is to try to set up a play to go the length of the court to get a bucket and get a good shot to win or tie the game. But what you do, as you know, when you do that is you allow the defensive team to get set up as well. And they get to put on their full court press or figure out if they're going to guard the arc, if you need a three or whatever. And it's just a lot more difficult to attack, in my opinion, a defense that is ready for you like that. So last night, that was not an option. With no timeouts left, that's the key. With no timeouts left, Start has to go the length of the floor with 10 seconds and get a shot so the defense doesn't have a chance to get set. It's a little bit chaotic. It's a little bit fast break. Push it up. Make the defense react. See where somebody can get hidden and nobody sees him. And that's what they did. And it's Lewis in the corner with the call that you just heard, hitting that game-winning three. And it's sometimes better that way. The buzzer beater that gives the City League Championship to start an amazing, you know, game. And I think maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Brandon Lewis was able to get open because there was nobody, no organized defensive game plan to account for all five guys on the floor. Sometimes mass chaos favors the offense a lot more than it does the defense, Kush.
Yeah, you know it does, and especially in those weird situations where you don't have the timeout. Usually, you think it's the offense that might be a little chaotic. Nobody drew up a play. You're just in some ways you're half kind of winging it out there. But you know it means the defense isn't as set as they like to be, particularly because this is one of those situations where they thought they had the game won. Well, you know, you get that last second, but not quite buzzer beater shot, but there's just enough time left on the clock.
And in this case, it wasn't even like almost a buzzer beater. It was a full 10 seconds. That's
right.
A lot of time.
No, absolutely.
That's a lot of time to have to play defense in order to make your quote unquote game winning shot stand up. You've got to defend for 10 solid seconds now.
Yep.
And I submit then that it's better and easier to do defensively. If there is a timeout called, you can set up how am I going to defend them for 10 seconds to not allow them to come back and tie or beat us. And because, you know, as I said, there was no timeout. 10 seconds is a lot of time for an offense to be able to hustle up the floor and get a lot of movement. The defense is not set up in a way that their coach would draw it up, and they miss somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, they missed Brandon Lewis in the corner. They didn't see him there. And he, you know, and by, how cool was it, too, Jim? His first bucket of the game.
Right.
You know, and as his coach said, you know, he's one of their best shooters all season long. He had not been able to get any to drop all game long in the city title game. And at the one time that he needs one to go, splash.
Yep.
Or way downtown, bang, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those great games that, you know, if you happen to be there, a great call if you were happening to listen to it. And, you know, one of the more fantastic finishes to a City League title game, you know, that one of those random basketball traditions here in town in all the years of its existence. And you know what's interesting? On a more zoomed out level, I was in for Mike yesterday, right? And I took a call from somebody because I was, you know, mentioning the fact that, hey, we got the City League game title game, you know, on tonight here on the ticket. This was yesterday. And he was talking to me. He's like, yeah, you know, but the quality of play, obviously, you know, isn't as good. And it's like, look, that is what it is because of the realignment that created the track a couple years ago. As we know, almost all of those, most of those teams, except for like Fremont, Lyman, and Findlay, of course, were part of the original big, tough City League. And yes, it is what it is since then. But you see games like that yesterday, and it's like, okay, obviously maybe some of the big boys and some of the Catholic ones aren't there anymore the way they used to be. but there's still quality, you know, in that league, especially at the basketball court. I think it's shafted a lot in football because of the, how the computer rankings work. You almost have to be an undefeated City League team just to make the football playoffs. But that's not the case. You know, in basketball, there are still quality teams that could still do damage. I remember it was just a couple years back when Rodgers upset their way to the district title. So you still have great quality, you know, even with the schools that still remain, that it might not seem, and it certainly not is what it was a couple years ago, but there's still a lot of pride there in those schools that are still left, and you still get great quality games like the one you saw yesterday.
And you get great memorable moments,
yes,
like last night. And Brandon Lewis said, he said, that's the biggest shot I've ever hit in my life. He will remember that when he's 40 and 50 and 60 and talking to grandkids and great-grandkids.
Yep.
And that's just so cool. So congrats, and we'll talk more about this, obviously, with Bill Clark. It'll be at about 4:40 in our regular Friday high school basketball segment, and we'll talk about that game last night and, of course, look ahead then to other action, regular season-ending matchups.
This is it for regular season Friday.
Tournament getting ready to go. What's that, Jim?
Absolutely. This is the last Friday of regular season. We'll have the sectional semis get underway mid-next week, and then we'll have a sectional final doubleheader a week from today. So regular season-wise, this is it.
Yep, no question. So I want to move on and talk a little college basketball now, because, and not talking about Ohio State or Michigan or games or Big Ten standings or any of those kind of things, or even MAC. Yesterday, of course, we had Coach Kowalczyk on, and thank you for sending for that, Jim, as I hacked my way through.
I said you were on the 10-hour DL.
That's right. But not even talking about that, but talking about the explosive story today, and I want to respond to this. You heard a little bit of it there at the end of the montage, or Jim, you played it. Everybody else heard it. What a bombshell report. There is an FBI investigation. This is not just an NCAA investigation of a school like Louisville, for example, which, of course, was just, forced, according to the appeal that was denied. They are indeed forced to take down their championship banner, vacate all wins from 2011 through 2013, I think it was, or maybe it was 14. All I know is it includes their 2013 national championship.
2012 Final Four, I think, is the other one you're thinking of.
Say again?
2012 Final Four.
Yes. But I'm talking about which years.
Right.
They vacated,
gotcha,
their wins. Was it 2011 through 2013 or through 2014?
14.
Okay. So they vacate their Final Four and their championship banner, of course, from 2013. So, and they have to take those banners down. And, that's different. That was just an NCAA violation. This is an FBI criminal investigation, and it involves some of the biggest names, coaches, and programs in the sport. I mean, this is massive. Yahoo Sports broke it. ESPN.com followed up on it, so we're going to go ahead and quote from ESPN. Players from more than 20 Division I men's basketball programs have been identified as possibly breaking NCAA rules through violations that were uncovered by the FBI's investigation into corruption in college basketball. Schools identified by Yahoo as having players who possibly violated NCAA rules are some of the who's who, some of the elite, some of the all-time programs. Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State, Texas, Southern Cal, Kansas. We're talking about literally some of the greatest, most successful, identifiable, iconic programs in the sport. Names like Coach K, Roy Williams, John Calipari, Tom Izzo, Bill Self, all of these people involved, just because of the head coaches of some of those teams. At least 25 players are linked to impermissible benefits, including Michigan State's Miles Bridges, Alabama's Colin Sexton, and Duke's Wendell Carter. Again, these are some huge, huge names in the sport. The documents obtained by Yahoo detail the work of former NBA agent Andy Miller and his agency, which is ASM Sports. Yahoo says that the documents show cash advances and entertainment and travel expenses paid for college prospects and their families. ESPN previously reported that as many as three dozen Division I programs, including many of the sport's traditional powers like I just listed, might be facing NCAA sanctions once the FBI releases the information it acquired during the investigation. One source familiar with the investigation, which includes more than 4,000 conversations intercepted through wiretaps and financial records and emails and other records seized from the agent Miller's office, told ESPN's Mark Schlabach that many of the sport's top coaches and players might be implicated, calling Miller's records the NCAA's worst nightmare. Excuse the long pause there. I'm still fighting the cough, Kushlin. If you have to be ready on call again for me to go to sick bay, be ready for that.
Oh, will do. I'm just scanning through some of this.
It's been a week
just...
now. It was last Sunday that I actually got sick, and I've been fighting it off for the last 5 days, doing what I can here. But anyway. So today's report, Jim, from Yahoo begins to name the teams and the players allegedly involved.
Yep.
At least six of the players were identified in the documents as receiving payments exceeding $10,000. They include Mavericks point guard Dennis Smith Jr., who received $73,500 in loans from ASM before he played for NC State. Brooklyn Nets shooting guard Isaiah Whitehead got more than $37,000 from the time he was a freshman at Seton Hall. No, a 2017 number one NBA draft pick, Markel Fultz, got $10,000. Other teams with current or former players who allegedly received payments were South Carolina, Louisville, in addition to the ones I mentioned, the big ones like Duke and Carolina and so on. South Carolina, Louisville, again, Utah, Xavier, Wichita State, Clemson, and Alabama. Other players named include LSU guard, former LSU guard Tim Quarterman, former Maryland center Diamond Stone, and Kentucky center Idris Bam Adebayo. Mark Emmert, NCAA president, says this: if true, these allegations point to systematic failures that must be fixed, and fixed now if we want college sports in America. Simply put, people who engage in this kind of behavior have no place in college sports. They are an affront to all those who play by the rules. Now I'm going to stop the narrative of the news that we just got, again, from Yahoo and coupled with ESPN, and ask the most obvious question here. Do you care? If you are a college basketball fan, does it bother you that players are being paid, in some cases, some pretty exorbitant amounts of money by programs who have boosters who have exorbitant amounts of money in order to get them to come and play? Especially since you now know that it's as widespread as it is. Now, for many, many years, we have all suspected, for obvious reasons, there have been occasional, busts, if you will. You know, we talked, Jim, earlier this week, we talked about the Fab Five and how much money Chris Webber was getting.
Right, right.
From Ed Martin, $280,000, and Jalen Rose got some perks and this, that, and the other thing. So we've always suspected this, but we don't know how many schools. We don't know how many teams. We don't know if there are good teams and good moral, integrity-driven programs that did not do this, and there's bad teams that did do this. We kind of figured there were good guys and bad guys. I never would have expected, for example, Duke to be implicated in something like this under Coach K. I would never have expected Tom Izzo and Michigan State to be implicated like this. I would never have expected Bill Self and Roy Williams. People like that just have good. I'm not surprised about Rick Pitino. I'm not surprised about Kentucky and John Calipari. We have a track record in some of their cases. So I always thought that there were good guys and bad guys. And so my take was, punish the bad guys severely, harshly. Drum that, like what Mark Emmert just said, drum them out of college sports. They don't have a place. But now that we know some of the supposedly clean programs are at least implicated in this investigation with information provided by the FBI, and the FBI has apparently been watching this and investigating college basketball bribes and corruption for at least 2 years, a very, very covert investigation. Now that we know that it's as widespread, do you care? Meaning, if everybody is doing it, if everybody is, you know, kind of trying to use whatever little extra influence it takes, a few dollars or a few perks or whatever it is, they're all kind of on the same playing field, does it matter to you as long as the games are good? translated. I'm asking if they stop doing this and some of these college players don't end up at the, you know, the great institutions that lead to Final Four and championship appearances that we love, and if it waters down the game because these people get drummed out of it, will you wish that they still had it? In some ways, Jim Cushlin, what I'm asking is, in some ways, is kind of like the steroid question in baseball. We hated all of the cheaters, and we said they should never be allowed into the Hall of Fame. They should be drummed out of baseball, all the steroid users. But then some said, wait a minute. Now that we find out it was a lot more widespread than just Bonds and Clemens and Sosa and McGuire and Canseco and Caminiti and whatever, now that we know it was much more widespread than that, including a lot of pitchers, it was more of a level playing field, so is it really that bad? That's kind of the question here. Is this corruption at the highest level of all of these supposedly clean programs just the death knell for college basketball, or is it a, man, they're all doing it? Well, then at least, you know, it's somewhat in a strange way fair. They're cheating, but they're all cheating, so it balances out, that kind of thing, Jim.
You know, there's a couple things that come to mind. Because first of all, I don't like the comparison to the steroid thing, the PED thing in, say, a baseball, because that to me is big. If the question here is level of cheating, that is bigger cheating than this how the sausage is made corruption that, quite frankly, deep down, we all know has been going on in college basketball and, of course, college football for decades upon decades upon decades. And sanctions and taking banners down and don't even seem to work. Heck, because of what happened to SMU back in the day in football, nobody will ever talk about instituting the death penalty on a program anymore. So I don't like that comparison. I think the PED stuff is worse than this kind of...
It is worse, and I wasn't comparing one to the other to say which is worse. I just mean about the, well, more people are doing it than we thought, so is it so bad that some were doing it? That's kind of all I meant.
Right. No, and I understand that. And getting to that part of it, because of the amount of names, some of which, okay, you look at the list again, you say, okay, I could see that pointing to Louisville. Okay, I could see that pointing to Kentucky. But then you see Coach K and Duke. You know, Xavier, right here in the backyard area, who might be a number one seed, you know, doing it. From going from guys that aren't making much in the NBA all the way through to number one draft picks.
Right.
And I think to myself, because I've been trying so hard for me personally and how I view these things, Bob, over the years, that, nope, this is my line in the sand. You're not going to pay guys, et cetera, and so on. And all these stories keep coming back up. Clearly, no punishments, you know, are working. And I hate to say it, Bob, I've noticed over the last 6 months to a year, I'm very much softening my old position.
Really?
On the paying the players thing.
Wow.
Maybe that's the way, sadly enough, to fix all these under the table booster shady things,
because again, we know these things have been going on for decades, and nothing is stopping it. Let me stop
nothing.
You, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I want to stop you on this.
I mean this
with all due respect, too. If it has already been going on without paying the players, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen when they start paying the players? If they start paying the players and they say, okay, here's the number that we have decided. Every scholarship player can receive X number of dollars as their stipend or their salary or whatever it is per year.
Yeah.
You know full well then there are still going to be boosters who say, all right, now that you have, let's say, $5,000 a semester in your pocket, you can explain away some of your expenses. You can explain how you purchase this or that or the other. And if I slip you another $5 because you come to my school and not his school, nobody's going to be any wiser because you have money. You're getting paid. You're allowed to have that car. You're allowed to have this. I'm just going to put you in a nicer car. I'm going to get you the nicer jewelry. I'm going to get you the whatever. If you start legalizing payments, all that will do is grow the amounts of illegal payments that follow it. It will not kill it. It will expand it. It will not kill the corruption, the boosters, the extra perks. It will just make them grow because now the players, you know, when you're, Jim, if your name is Jason Smith, And you come from a really, really poor area of Detroit, and you got nothing. And your parents live in Section 8 housing, and you were blessed with the gift of basketball,
right.
And you worked hard, and you got an opportunity to go to a scholarship school or get a scholarship and go to school. And you start rolling around school with diamond earrings and a car. You didn't have a diamond earring or a car when you grew up in that Section 8 housing impoverished lifestyle of yours. You're just getting paid to go to school. You're not, I mean, you know, meaning your scholarship, your classes are paid for. Where'd you get the money for that? It's easy to see. If you're an investigator, you can see those kinds of things. They stand out like a stick out like a sore thumb.
Oh, yeah.
But if you give him $5,000, what he does with it is his business. And if he buys, you know, $2,000 earrings or buy, you know, gets a car or whatever the case might be, you know, leases one or whatever, you can't see it. And then when he has something else, is somebody going to be there checking his receipts to see exactly how much he is spending? If he got $5,000 from the actual payment program and he got another $5,000 from somebody else, it's going to be a lot harder to find the corruption.
No, and I don't disagree. You know, with anything you said, I feel like I'm at a roadblock trying to figure out in my own silly little way how to fix this. Because at the same time, while everything I think you said is correct, isn't it clear still at the, you know, punishments aren't working? You know, taking down banners and giving, you know, probation to the program long after the players or even coaches in question are gone, that's not doing anything.
Hold on a second. When you say punishments aren't working, let's really examine that. What punishments are being tried? Because to me,
It's the same old thing I feel.
What's that?
It's the same old ones, the taking down banners and putting teams on probation.
But we've had
ample evidence, I think, over time to conclude that's not stopping any of these things.
No, it's not. And this is my point. The banners thing, like I mentioned to you when we talked about the Fab 5 30 for 30.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy King said, what, they can take our banners down, but ask anybody if they remember who the starting five was for North Carolina when they beat us, when we had
Sure.
Nobody knows, but they know all of our names. So that's not a real punishment. It's just a symbolic punishment.
Yep.
What I want to see is who's responsible for these things, coaches and boosters and combinations, both head coaches and assistant coaches. For example, in the Louisville thing that just took them down with the sex, the strippers and hookers and everything else, enticing recruits on visits. And it was supposedly Rick Pitino's assistant coaches who did it, and yada, yada, yada. To me, Jim, their banners being taken down doesn't hurt them. Find them.
Yeah.
Take all of their money. First offense, you know, it's a $2 million fine, Rick Pitino. Now, Rick Pitino's making, I don't know, $6 or $7 million. Maybe that's not even enough, but you understand it might be for everybody else. Maybe it's a percentage.
And not just the coach. Fines need to go to the schools,
program,
too.
If you run a dirty program, forget about banners. We're taking 10, 15, 20% of your salary away, whatever your contract is for a year. That's because if you tell Roy Williams at North Carolina, I'm just picking on him because North Carolina was one of the names in this investigation revealed today. If you tell Roy Williams, Roy, you're going to lose 20% of your salary if you run a dirty program. You have one illegal payment. You have one illegal perk, one thing that violates NCAA rules when it comes to recruiting these kids. You're losing 20% of your salary. You don't think Roy Williams will have his finger on every single aspect of his recruiting, on every coach, every scout, every I will be dotted, every T will be crossed. Everybody will be towing the line because my money's on the line here.
Yes.
I'm not letting you guys do this and hurting my bottom line. If I don't get that, you know, five-star recruit and somebody else does, so be it. If it puts my money in jeopardy to get him, I'll play with the four-star recruit. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and in that same vein, there also has to be a financial punishment to the school in question, not just the coach, because how many times have these types of stories come up over the years? And in the end of the day, it's like the school looked the other way because, hey, you're bringing us that little extra money and exposure.
And
so they have to be fined, the school itself, too, so that even if something slips up with the coach's new hawk eyes, there's somebody back there who stands to lose if they get caught,
too. I think
there's
a way to do that, too. But I mean, because that's why when you said, well, now the punishments haven't worked because the punishments haven't been something they care about.
Right.
They might say they care about records and reputations
yep.
and banners. But when you start taking away what they're in this business for, I mean, let's be honest.
Hitting in the wall, it always seems to work.
Mike Krzyzewski loves basketball. He loves kids. He loves coaching.
Yep.
Sure he does. But he ain't doing this for free. He is in this because it's a job. Every coach is doing this for a salary, and they would not do it with no salary.
Right.
And that means that's the most important thing to them. That's what you have to take from them. All right, Kush, we're a little late here in our first segment, so we'll get a quick timeout. We got a bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way. I would like to talk a little bit more about this and also a little bit more about the NBA last night, but coming up at 4:10-ish, Kush?
That's right. It's about 4:10.
We're going to talk to Eddie Meissonette, Sports Fan Journal, online, as well as Fox Sports contributor about the start of the second half. Cavaliers started it on a bad note last night. The Pistons start their second half tonight, and we'll do all of that after we get our bottom of the hour local sports center, which comes after we get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day. What happened to my music? It went away. That's no fun, but that's okay. I can still give you the Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day. Has to do with that Cavaliers start to their second half of the season last night. LeBron James had 32 points in the loss to the Wizards. LeBron now, with that 32-point performance, for the 11th time in his career, has scored at least 1,500 points and handed out at least 500 assists in a single season. That 11 times ties Oscar Robertson for the most in NBA history, as he also had 11 such seasons. Pretty sure LeBron is probably going to break that next year. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We'll get a bottom of the hour local sports center. Come right back after this on ESPN 106.5.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling onward, are we on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are Toledo's sports leader. Don't forget, coming up in about half an hour or so, at about 4:10, we're going to talk with Eddie Meissonette, Sports Fan Journal Online, as well as Fox Sports contributor about the NBA. I want to stay, Kush, with the conversation on college basketball to talk about whether or not this matters to people, because that was the real question here is, you said you find yourself softening on the idea of paying players. I don't. I still believe they're already being paid an extraordinary amount of money and by way of tuition, room, board, books, clothing, and on down the line.
Right.
Not to mention an opportunity to go get a career where they're never going to have to make those monthly student loan payments back that everybody else at their college has to do. So, this is a huge payment. For most of them, an average full boat tuition for 4 years is about a $200,000 salary that they'd be making for 2 years. That's pretty doggone good money if you can get it. That doesn't mean it costs everybody $200,000 to go for 4 years, but the perks
right.
that they get add up to all of
it. And I should say, my softening of it is a little because I keep reading these type stories, or they get bigger ones like this one, and I feel either you got to do that or you got to really change around the punishment to the schools, the coaches, the programs, whatever, so they actually feel it to actually be a deterrent, because clearly what's going on now, not a deterrent. And I'm just breaking down that it's one or the other at this point if you want to save the integrity.
Agreed. And I'm okay with that statement. It's one or the other. It's just that I have decided on my one, not the other.
I prefer it to be yours.
To change the punishment.
Yeah, and I prefer it to be yours, but unless they fix these punishments, I'm running out of options here.
But here's the other, the real question that I wanted to ask. I'm going to take you back to 1995 or 6. Yeah, 96, I want to say. I'm totally guessing on that, but it was mid-90s. The movie Blue Chips, right? You saw Blue Chips?
Yes, I did. I haven't seen it in quite some time, but I did cross my path once, yep.
Nick Nolte, the coach, playing a very Bobby Knight-ish character. Shaquille O'Neal playing Neon Bordeaux, this phenom from the backwoods of Louisiana someplace, and Anthony Hardaway, Penny Hardaway, Butch McRae. I still remember the names because I just loved the movie, and I loved it then. I love all sports movies for the most part. Anyway, the story was for those who know it, obviously, if younger fans might not. People who are 40 or over probably remember pretty well. But for those who don't know, the story involved a coach who was a really highly successful two-time national champion coaching a UCLA-type program called Western University.
the Dolphins out there in L.A. And it was very, they even had the colors. They were like blue and yellow, like
right,
UCLA,
yeah.
Which is kind of not cool, I'm sure, for UCLA, but whatever. But he was very successful, but he had had a couple of down years. And, the boosters are getting on him, and what's going on? How come we can't win? Blah, blah, blah. And he needs better players. He's, hasn't had the recruiting. And he's eventually convinced by one of the boosters, look, the reason you're not getting the top recruits that you used to get, it's not your fault. It's just that everybody else is buying them. Everybody else. And that's what made me think of this is the news today. That we're discussing here that was broken by Yahoo and then pushed and promoted by ESPN, that NCAA teams, about 20 of them, including some of the iconic programs, have all been implicated in an FBI investigation of college basketball corruption and bribery, including Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State, and on down the line we go, Kansas. So going back to the blue chips, basically the booster convinced the coach that, look, everybody is doing this. And if you don't do this, you're going to get left behind. You're not going to get these guys. They're being paid tens of thousands of dollars. Some of them are being given houses. Their relatives are being given jobs and so on and so forth. And they predictably made it pretty over the top in the movie because it's Hollywood. And you have to, they exaggerate things. But, like even Neon, the Shaquille O'Neal character, they gave him a fully loaded Lexus, and he was one of the few who didn't even ask for anything, but they just did it because it was the way it's done. And so they went over the top with it. But the message to the coach, who did have a moral compass, that's essentially the plot of the story. The coach didn't want to do this. He was so against it. I don't give money to players. I don't cheat. We run a clean program. We do it by the book. And this is how we win. And this is how we, we do business. But the losses started to take their toll on him. The pressure got so heavy. He was out there recruiting the best players. They were saying, okay, we'll come if you meet our price. And he knows if he doesn't, he loses them to his rivals who are going to run him out of his job by continuing to win games. And so eventually he does pay them, and we know the rest. Reporters are digging into it, blah, 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 but they didn't even need to really come for him because his guilty conscience got the best of him and ended up confessing. But the moral and the message in the climactic scene, which is a press conference after a big win, as he says to the media there, is that these kids, these 10-year-old kids out there right now who are already dunking, they hold our future employment in their hands. This is a reality. This is a movie, but that script and that scene and that statement and that sentiment and that moral of the story is accurate. These kids hold our future employment in their hands. If we can't get the best players here, somebody else gets them. And then when we have to play against them with our inferior players, we lose. And when we lose, I get fired. That's reality. That's truth. If you don't do the same things that the other guys are doing, you'll lose your job. That's what this coach found out and figured out. So eventually he said, I can't be a part of this anymore, and he quit. But most coaches, including Jim, which is why I brought up all those names of honor in college basketball, the Roy Williams, Bill Self,
yeah,
Krzyzewski, Tom Izzo type coaches, which are a little different from the slippery, slimy, multi-time caught Calipari's and Pitino's of the world. I think a lot of them probably are like Nick Nolte's character in that movie. They're like, we don't do that here. But eventually, when they see, especially now in the competition for one and dones,
yeah,
there may be a lot of those coaches, including some of the names that I just mentioned, who just said, I might not be willing to go for this, but I'm going to look the other way. And if something happens that helps entice this five-star one-and-done guy to my program, then so be it. I didn't know about it. Plausible deniability. And that's how some of them are getting hooked, because it still remains the truth today. It was the truth in 96 or whenever that movie came out, and it was the truth. It's the truth in 2018. Young teenage athletes hold college coaches' futures in their hands. And how can that system possibly survive without some kind of corruption?
No, and that's a great question, and that's why we're here today with all of these names, some we thought good, some we would have expected to be shady, all on the same list. Because, you know, some of the good ones, the in theory good ones that you named off, well, those are all classic blue blood programs. You have a couple bad seasons, underwhelming seasons, everyone is calling for your head. So that sadly is, you know, how it is, as Nick Nolte, as you're again pointing out, Nick Nolte's character at the end of that, you know, said that that's where we're at right now.
You know, the other part, by the way, I looked up Blue Chips while you were talking, and I was close. It was 94.
Okay.
94. I said
that's still mid-90s. It counts.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. That's a bucket. I'll take that. That's a score. Anyway, in some cases, people might say, no, you're wrong. They're not going to call for Mike Krzyzewski's head. You know, how many national titles does Mike have? Five?
Well, yeah, at least so.
They're not going to call for his head if he has a few down seasons, the way the movie kind of overplayed that. Well, maybe not, but in some cases like his, or like some of the other legendary names that I just mentioned, they might not be on the verge of being fired if they don't continue to be a top 10 team and playing into the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, or Final Four at least three out of every 4 years. But it just is below their standard, and they watch their legacy take a hit. Mike Krzyzewski or John Wooden, who's the greatest college basketball coach of all time. Those questions have been asked. Those questions are asked right now in college football. Nick Saban or Bear Bryant? Each of them won 6 national championships with Alabama. Which one of them is the best? And those kinds of legendary careers suddenly start to lose their luster if, you know, Duke goes 19-13 and with a first round exit. And then next year, you know, they go 20-15. Or maybe that's too many games, but you understand the point.
Yeah.
With another first round exit, and suddenly it's, has Krzyzewski lost his magic? Has the game passed the aging Krzyzewski by?
Well, you could see
has
the headlines
Roy Williams
right now.
Lost his ability to compete at the highest level. All of those things start being asked. And you know, these guys might be great people. And these guys might be great coaches, and they might seem like they are above it all, but at the end of the day, they're human beings. And human beings have pride. Human beings have egos. And if you don't think that they care how their name is referenced in terms of their all-time careers, then you're lying. I'm sure it means a lot to these guys to be thought of as one of the all-time greats, rather than a guy who, like a player, like an aging player, Jim, who hung on and coached a few years too many and couldn't turn out the winners anymore. Mm-hmm. When the truth of the matter is they coached the same way, but they couldn't get the players
right
they wanted anymore because they decided not to cheat.
Yeah, and it's just, it's so pervasive, especially just by looking, skimming over this report. It's so pervasive. We're once again, here we are again. I remember saying one time when I was hosting for you or Mike, I can't remember, it was a couple months ago, but I'm like, every 6 months, it seems, we're reading a story very near identical to this one. You're just changing out a few names. And this is what kind of circles back to what we were talking about a little bit last segment on this, which is, you know, how do you fix it? And if you want to keep it, without paying them, which, by the way, for the record, I would like that to still be the option. I'm softening because I'm questioning if that's going to end up being the option or not anymore. But clearly, hitting of the wallet has to be something that is in there that we don't see really as much now.
Well, Jim, you know, the reason I'm going to always steer you back away from that cliff you're about to go over with paying players is, again, they're in the interest of fairness. There would never be a fair way to even do that.
I agree.
Because,
oh, I agree.
Because think
I agree
about this. Think about this. How much money does the Ohio State University football program make every year?
Oh, geez. I know they're around the positive, but most programs lose. But Ohio State's one of the ones near the top that actually might
per
make
year,
a positive.
Probably $50 to $100 million they generate.
Yeah.
You know, with all of their sales, merchandise tickets, filling 110,000 people in the stadium, blah, 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 TV deals, et cetera, Big Ten. They probably generate tens of millions of dollars a year. How much money do you think the University of Toledo football program generates every year? I don't know.
Not anywhere near that. I know that.
But it's one tiny fraction of a percent of that. And I say that not to denigrate the University of Toledo football program, quite obviously. But the point is, whatever the national stipend amount is going to be is not going to be fair for somebody. If the amount is $5,000 a player, you know, Ohio State can absorb that very easily, and so let's pay the players. For Toledo, that might be difficult. 85 scholarships times 5,000 players, or $5,000 a player, that's going to be very, very hard to do, especially when you then add in Title IX rules.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Ohio State has to pay its swimming team, which generates no money. In fact, costs money to run. And I just pick swimming out of a hat. You can go to lacrosse or bowling or whatever other.
No offense, pretty much anything except football or men's basketball.
Right.
Not even women's basketball and not even baseball.
So, you know, if you have to pay $5,000 per scholarship athlete because of the new pay the players a stipend thing, it will kill the University of Toledo.
Yeah.
It will probably make them have to shut down some of those non-revenue generating sports. Ohio State will be able to absorb that cost with ease.
I know.
With no problem at all. And so the unfair advantage is still there. So that's why the answer can never be to me, Jim, pay the players, because there's no equitable way for everybody to get paid and for all schools to be able to afford to make those payments.
Yeah, and that's
the problem.
And we brought that up, but you know, before when this subject has come up. And again, I want to say that I agree with you. I want it to be, you know, this way. And by the way, FYI, I found a Business Insider article from this past November. Ohio State number 2 in the nation, $169.9 million. Just throwing that out there.
In 1 year?
In 1 year.
I said 50 to 100.
And that's, and by the way, according to this Business Insider article, that's down 1% from the season before.
Are they number one, by the way?
Number 2, Texas is still number 1, and they get an above 500 football team.
Oh, and oh, by the way, just since you brought it up, Texas is one of the 3 teams listed in this report as potential impermissible benefits and preferential treatment for players and families, including schools that had players who received $10,000 or more. The 3 schools are Duke, North Carolina, and Texas. Oh, no, I take that back. There's more. Duke, North Carolina, Texas, the other ones I mentioned, Kentucky, Michigan State, USC, Alabama, NC State, Seton Hall, LSU, Maryland, and Washington. And then there's a bunch of other lists included in this report. Again, these are all from the FBI, including schools with active players implicated, guys playing right now who have been paid, schools with former players implicated, which is a much longer list. And I'll tell you what, with the exception of Michigan State, I'm happy to say that I don't see any of the other teams that, you know, we cover very closely here in Northwest Ohio included. No Ohio State, no Michigan, no Notre Dame.
Yeah, the only other one that was in our backyard that we point out was Xavier.
Yeah, Xavier, which is in the state, but still a little bit further. But yeah, so anyway, okay, we got top of the hour, your local sports center coming your way. Very interesting stuff, very difficult conversations to have, even harder to find answers for these many questions, but we'll continue the discussion. But we will talk more about the NBA, or actually get into the NBA as well, coming up after the top of the hour. Sports Center, local Sports Center. Eddie Meissonette will be joining us, our good friend from Los Angeles, from Fox Sports, and from Sports Fan Journal Online. Hey, before we get to the Sports Center, question for you. Do you need a new roof? $1 down. Need new siding for the house? $1 down. Need new windows? $1 down. You can get a new look. Your choice, roof, siding, or windows, for $1 down. That's the power of 7 years interest-free. You get that? You don't have to spend a lot of money down when you don't have to pay any interest for 7 years. So don't delay. Call WeatherSeal today. Get that roof, siding, windows you've always wanted for $1 down. Call 877-WINDOWS. That's WeatherSeal, 877-WINDOWS. Call WeatherSeal today and get them online at weathersealhomeservices.com. Back after this.
5 boards, 3 assists. Pass ahead. J.R. Smith makes the catch. Bags a triple. Another Washington timeout. Green. Great pass to Nance. Floating in the lane and jams it with 2 hands. James covering Beal. And now driving down the lane is Mahinmi. 1 to shoot in the corner. Oubre for 3. Hits it right at the shot clock horn. Kelly Oubre. Bradley Beal stops the dribble on top. Gives to Porter. Fires a 3 and hits. Otto Porter Jr. Cold as ice there. It's a 9-point game. So here comes James with a minute 17 to go. Head of steam down the lane. Off the glass and in. 12 straight points for LeBron James. It's a 3-point game. Beal quickly fires to Porter. Hit as he scores. Porter scoring a huge bucket, and Cleveland calls for time with the Wizards going up 5.
We can be really good. We got 20-plus games left to try to figure it out. It's going to be very challenging, you know, but I accept the challenge. and I think the guys are excited about, you know, just trying to learn every day. You know, now we're going to get to a point where we're playing every other day so we can learn on the floor. But when we have our film sessions, when we have our walkthroughs, we got to continue to keep our mind sharp because that's all we have. We have to lean on that. We're not like Washington. We're not like Toronto. You know, obviously Boston got some, you know, new guys. They're figuring it out as well. But we're not like a lot of the teams where we can just hang our hats on our chemistry and how long we've been together.
It's bad. You know, there's a repairing of a relationship. This had been a tremendous partnership. I mean, Kawhi Leonard had become, you know, from the 15th pick in the draft, he'd become finals MVP there, two-time first-team All-League, two-time All-Defensive Player of the Year, and a player who this year was a lot of people's, you know, potential front-runner for MVP. You know, the injury and the rehab to this right quad, it's just taken on a life of its own. It is an unusual situation, and it is unusual for a Spurs organization that has, you know, traditionally had very strong relationships and connections with its players.
The Western Conference has been pushing for this for years. They could get 15 votes today among all the Western Conference teams to seed at 1 through 16, but they need a supermajority. That's 23, so you'd have to get 8 of the Eastern Conference teams to go along with it. There's much more support for that, but that's still a ways away to be able to do that.
And now, with 15 seconds to go in the game, Rodgers has the basketball, and we're tied at 46. And Lewis will trigger the inbounds pass under the rim basket. They'll bounce it in the corner. Christian Smith, he'll drive in, lay it up, and get it to go! With 10 seconds to go in the game, Lewis has himself 18 points. Here's a triple try, boom! At the buzzer! The Stark Spartans have come back, and they win the city championship! And a three-pointer at the buzzer by Brandon Perry!
College basketball is already in trouble. We used to love the season. Now all we seem to care about is March Madness. And any time further negative publicity comes down the pike, it doesn't help the sport, particularly when some of the big names, who are the kind of individuals that are so revered by the media and the public at large, if they start falling like dominoes too, who knows what this is going to do to college basketball. I think this is the tip of the iceberg. I'm not surprised at all. And the people who get implicated, make no mistake about it, because the FBI is involved, they're going to start singing.
Bob Brandt's Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Alrighty then, onward we roll in the second hour of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for joining us here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo sports leader. What an amazing moment once again. I don't want to do the entire thing we did in the first half hour of the program, but I'm going to ask our next guest about it. Yes, it's a high school game in Northwest Ohio, the City League Championship game. But I'm going to ask a guy in Los Angeles about it because I think it's a pretty cool conversation. In addition to talking all things NBA, as the second half of the season is underway now, the Cavaliers started their second half, as you heard, a little bit there by their loss, with their loss to the Wizards. And by the way, why is Washington so much better without John Wall than they were with him? Anyway, we'll get into that. And then the Pistons, of course, start their season, second half of the season tonight. And joining us from Los Angeles, once again, is our friend Eddie Meissonette. Eddie, of course, is with SportsFanJournal.com, as well as a Fox Sports contributor and many, many more titles. Eddie, good to have you back here in Northwest Ohio. How are you?
I'm doing well, my brother. Good talking to you.
Always good to talk to you. Sorry about that. A little glitch there. Eddie, just real quick. The Toledo City League championship game last night in high school is just one of those things. If you were coaching and you had just given up a bucket with 10 seconds to go to break a tie, so you're down two with 10 seconds to go, if you are the trailing team and you had a timeout, do you call a timeout there, or do you let the ball get inbounded and rush up the court and get a good look before the defense has to set itself?
Yeah, I mean, in that scenario, I think we're traditionally molded to say call a timeout and try to set a play. But, you know, we're also talking about 15- to 17-year-old kids. So, you know, these things can sometimes be who has the best player, who do I trust, and do I trust that the other team could be organized enough to try to organize against our chaos? So, you know, as a coach, it's harder to probably make that decision, but I would say I would like to believe I would make that decision.
So you would make the decision to let it run, Let them go. Yeah, I feel the same way. It's in this particular case, not that you care too much about it, Eddie, but in this particular case, they didn't have any timeouts anyway. Toledo Stark did not have any timeouts left anyway, so he couldn't have done it. But I was telling Jim in the first half hour of the program, I think that's a blessing there. If you have a timeout, the tendency is to overcoach it and call the timeout and set up a play to get a shot, which, of course, gives the other guy a chance to set up a defense and account for all five guys and try to lock him down for 10 seconds. But on the chaos of a quick inbound and, you know, without a timeout, they've got to hurry up the court. It's easy for the defense to lose somebody, and they lost the kid in the corner. They, you know, the ball found him, and he hit the game winner there. So I just think it's one of those interesting things. Basketball sometimes, particularly in the NBA where there are so many timeouts, you know, and you have seven timeouts, it seems, between, you know, the minute and a half mark and the end of a game as every play is stopped and scripted. I think sometimes overcoaching is your enemy, and you just let the guys go make a play before the defense has a chance to get set.
The only thing I know about Toledo High School is that former Pittsburgh Steeler Roosevelt Nix went there. That's the only thing I got.
No, you got to know about Jimmy Jackson, too.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just saying off the top of my head.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, Jimmy Jackson is a legend. I'm just the first person, for whatever reason, I thought about was Roosevelt Nix, which is a really odd nugget to have.
And that's okay. That's a good one to have, too. But, yeah, when I think about Toledo basketball, particularly Toledo High School basketball, yeah, Jimmy Jackson was a legend, and he was a legend for all of us growing up in the 80s, too, because I was in high school the same time he was, and he was just, I mean, he was like LeBron before LeBron. And if there had been a chosen one cover story in a Sports Illustrated back then, it would have been for Jimmy Jackson. He was just something special, and obviously continued to be so at Ohio State before his NBA career. All right, Eddie, let's get back to the actual NBA now, and there's a lot of different areas I want to cover with you, and we'll start with off-the-court stuff, just because of what we found out in the last couple of days about the Dallas Mavericks, and the NBA now apparently has set up a hotline to for employees to report improper conduct, inappropriate behavior, harassment, and the like, and this is all a result of Mark Cuban, who is, you know, well, he's in some trouble now. He made a couple of really, really bad decisions, it would appear. He kept on the Mavs.com beat reporter after two convictions for domestic violence, said he wanted to keep him on because he could treat him or help him get treatment there rather than turn him loose to go somewhere else where he can continue to be bad, which is one of the lamest things I've ever heard. And then, of course, his former CEO was a serial sexual harasser. Women in the employ of the Mavericks were told, don't ever get into an elevator with that guy. And this all went on under Mark Cuban's watch. How damaging is this to the Mavericks? And then, Eddie, since you do a lot of NBA reporting and discussion, to the league as a whole, how bad is that?
Oh, well, I think it's 100% damaging. I mean, talk about a bad week, right? I mean, him getting fined $600,000 is like the least of Mark Cuban's concerns right now. And I think it's absolutely damaging to the reputation of the Dallas Mavericks. At the same time, you know, I look at it from kind of this maybe macro perspective of you think about Mark Cuban, a guy who comes from a, you know, a very, you know, forward progressive thinking environment, coming from tech and being willing to be innovative in a lot of ways and being willing to speak out on a lot of things controversially in some ways that makes him look really good and sometimes it hasn't. But he's always seems to be a really progressive guy. And the fact that, you know, this could happen under his watch is a testament that if this could happen under his watch and something that he built in this way, I think it's probably, you have to think about maybe how much this is happening, not just at the Dallas Mavericks, but in organizations all across the country. You know, he comes from a tech environment, and I, as someone who used to be a Google employee, you know, it's, you see kind of a different type of boys club from that type of environment, and asking him to now, a guy who was living hard, who had Dennis Rodman living in his house at one point, he got fined for it. You figure out this man is building an NBA organization. The net result is the obliviousness to, like, the negligence of these types of things. Do I think he was aware of all of these things? Like, I think it's plausible that he was not aware of 70, 80, 90% of these things. Is he responsible? Is he liable for these things? 100%. And I think the NBA is showing you now that they're not going to take a stand. They're not going to take this type of abuse happening under their watch. The fact that they fined him $600,000 for the tampering and was the third biggest penalty I think we've seen in NBA history is one thing. To see what's going to be the net result of what's happened with this in the coming days and weeks, I think is going to be fascinating as well.
Eddie, you're a knowledgeable guy, and I respect your intelligence greatly. So I'm going to ask you this further than NBA. You're a culturally aware guy too. How widespread do you think this really is in sports? We can expand that out of the NBA into the NFL too, because it would appear to me, just based on recent events, that places that are predominantly type A male dominated, including Hollywood. The Harvey Weinstein thing and what that spawned, all of the other things that were uncovered there, politics, big news operations, Matt Lauer, Bill O'Reilly, Roger Ailes, all of these different people in these type A male-dominated things have found to been, serially harassing women and committing all kinds of really inappropriate behaviors and sometimes, actual assaults. And there's no more type A male-dominated industry than professional sports, than the NBA and maybe the NFL or Major League Baseball. So I guess what I'm asking is, do you think that the Mavericks are the first shoe to drop of what are going to be many throughout professional sports?
Yeah, I don't know if I doubt they'll be the first shoe to drop. What I found fascinating in some of the revelations from the research and the stories is that, the women that were dealing with these issues, they felt most safe in the locker room.
Yeah.
And the locker room conversation that's happened in our country the last couple of years has been tainted by people of the highest leadership. And now you've got these women saying that they felt like their sanctuary was the treatment that they received from players like Dirk Nowitzki and Vince Carter. And I think that anytime you have industries that are dominated by what I would call the coolness tax, so the coolness tax is, where do people that work in places that are really cool and they're willing to do less or sacrifice more to get into those industries? It can be sports. It can be entertainment. It can be anything that is high profile. People are going to sometimes take advantage of the fact that people are willing to do whatever it takes to get into this industry. I know that when I decided to commit to working in sports, I took a pretty significant pay cut to do it. And so you think about just from a financial standpoint, but sometimes people are sacrificing their dignity, sacrificing their integrity and the things that they see, because that's the other part of it. And you think about, and I don't want to pick on Penn State in this scenario, but you've got a lot of people that were seeing things at Penn State and a lot of people that respected and revered Joe Paterno and also were protected the fact that they have this highly high-profile exclusive job, that people are going to continually be willing to look away to these things. And so I'm glad that this spotlight is happening, and the fact that a lot of people that get into professional sports, they're owning these teams, and they come from a lot of money, but they don't necessarily come from traditional means of building an organization. Steve Ballmer, I would bet, actually probably does have a pretty well-run organization because he comes from a really high-profile organization that built great things. Mark Cuban came from a startup, and he was blowing money fast and living a high life for a long time, and now – he's actually probably become one of the more conservative owners in the NBA based on what maybe he was maybe 15, 20 years ago when he first got into the NBA.
Very interesting observations all the way around. One last question on the Mavs, Eddie, before we move on to some other things, and this one is on the competitive side of it. You referenced the $600,000 fine for telling his players to lose. And while he didn't say, guys, go lose, he admitted in an interview with Dr. J on the Dr. J podcast, he said, I was having some dinner with our guys the other night, and I told them losing is our best option. If that's not signaling, guys, I'm not gonna get upset if we lose, the majority of our remaining games so that we can rebuild with higher draft picks and get more ping pong balls, etc. That's okay with me. I found that just to be staggering. It's one thing to tank, but to tank quietly, meaning, we just don't have a great roster now and we're not upset about that because it's going to get better when we lose a bunch of games and we get higher draft picks. It's another thing to tell the guys, don't go and give your all. It's okay. Losing is our best option here, fellas. So don't feel any pressure to win right now. I found that just, I don't know. That was amazing to me, and I don't know if $600,000 was enough of a fine.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a point right now in professional sports, especially in the NBA, is that there are only a few ways to get better. You either get better by getting the best players in the world, by any means necessary, either by free agency trade or or you get really good by being really terrible. And then there's a third method, which is, you know, almost a risque, fad-like thing, which is marginal incremental improvement based on actually knowing about basketball, which, you know, which is probably the Danny Ainge method as the most notable of recent history. So, you know, I think that it's funny that Mark Cuban was probably telling the truth, but I think it's a bigger indictment of what the NBA is right now. And I think Adam Silver's response to that with such a harsh fine, the third largest fine in the last, like, 15, 20 years, is that that's not going to be tolerated. And you compare that to Major League Baseball, where you know, Rob Manfred has basically come out here and co-signed that tanking is acceptable and lauds the behavior of the Miami, of the Chicago Cubs and the Houston Astros as a net result of it, meanwhile neglecting what's been going on with the Tampa Bay Rays, the Miami Marlins, the Pittsburgh Pirates. The list goes on and on of teams that have tried those methods and they failed miserably to do it. So, you know, I think it is a testament in some ways to where Silver wants the league to be. I also am not sure what he's going to actually going to be able to do about it. I mean, the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, were, you know, Sam Hinkie's probably never going to get a job in the NBA again. And people have praised him now for this process. But if you look at the process, you know, he went and played that lottery for 4 or 5 years. And in my opinion, he may have only gotten two of those five choices right, because he missed on Michael Carter Williams. He missed on Jahlil Okafor. He missed on Nerlens Noel. He's probably now missed on Markel Fultz. And yet now the Philadelphia 76ers, after 5, 6, 7 years of continued losing, I can't even remember the last time Andre Iguodala was on that roster. And when they were actually a decent team, Drew Holiday was on that roster, I should say. You have to start thinking about what is the impact on that team, on that organization, and the fans. Like, I don't think Nerlens Noel ever actually recovered. He had to deal with 180, 200 losing games on that team after being a winner his entire career. And I think that that's a shame on what that organization did. And I think Silver's at least acknowledging the fact that that's something we can't allow to happen.
Eddie Meissen is our guest as we continue on the extravaganza on this free-for-all Friday, talking a lot of NBA news and stories. Eddie is with Sports Fan Journal Online as well as Fox Sports and others. Eddie, we're going to talk about the local teams here in a minute, which are the Pistons and the Cavaliers that we care about here in Northwest Ohio. But let me stay in Texas and ask what in the hell is going on with Kawhi Leonard. Medically cleared by all doctors, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, but medically cleared to come back. And yet it's his decision as to when he is going to come back, and he says, I'm not coming back. Greg Popovich says he's not going to come back. What's going on? Why is there such discord between Kawhi and the Spurs, or is it between Kawhi and Pop, or is it between Kawhi and teammates? And why are fans not killing Kawhi for not playing when he is medically cleared? A lot of guys would be killed for that, you know, for saying you've got no heart. You know, this is a team that's, what, third in the West? They got a chance to make some noise in the playoffs. They get their MVP candidate type player back, and he's not coming back, and nobody's really criticizing Kawhi. So can you make any sense out of all that?
Yeah, actually. Look, I think you're in a situation, first of all, if you're the San Antonio Spurs and you've got someone, you've got Kawhi Leonard who's been cleared on your end, but he's got specialists saying that he's based on the recommendation that he might not be ready, and Kawhi personally doesn't feel ready. And that's Kawhi knowing his body better than anybody else. Him saying he doesn't feel ready, I think at some point you've got to have that question of, hey, would we want him back on the court if he doesn't feel right? Because he's not going to perform to his highest level, A. If you go the route of, oh, well, we're going to take your money away because you're not playing, even though you're cleared to play, good luck getting any player ever to want to come to play for the Spurs again, ever in the next 5, 10, 15 years, too. I think that there's also a scenario of, you know, he is looking at players like Derrick Rose, for example. And Derrick Rose, they kept saying in practice, like, oh, he's killing it. Oh, he's going to be great. He's going to look incredible. And then he returned to Miami, and he looked like he had no business being on the court. You can look at Isaiah Thomas in some ways in a similar fashion and say, look, man, he had that major hip surgery. This is the hip. Like, you know, Bo Jackson's career ended off of an issue with his hip. I know it might not be as severe, but it's still a hip surgery. And Isaiah Thomas looks like a shell of himself in his return. And so, you know, I think if you're the Spurs and you're better off managing, letting Kawhi be ready on his own terms, because he is the franchise, and you also want to make sure that he's going to be a free agent at the end of the next season. I'm assuming you want Kawhi Leonard to return, because when he's in his physical peak, when he's in his prime, he's a top five player in the NBA. So, you know, if he doesn't come back this season, you know, everybody's like, oh, you need to do it for the fans, and you need to do it for this. A lot of people you need to be worried about is the fans. They're going to be all right. They're going to be fine as soon as he comes back healthy and he's dominating.
But let me jump in here for a second, Eddie. Is there more to it than just this injury, though? I mean, when I see headlines in ESPN and other places saying Spurs and Kawhi could be headed for a messy divorce, is there more to it than just disagreeing about whether he's physically able to play? Or is there something else there? Is there a philosophical thing between these two sides?
Sure. Yeah, look, I think it's two things. One, we don't know anything about Kawhi Leonard, and that's not a knock on Kawhi Leonard. I just, you know, I mean, think about any of the most memorable quotes Kawhi Leonard has ever given us.
None.
I can't think of
one.
Nope. But look, there's another famous number two that never gave us any memorable quotes, and his name is Derek Jeter, and he spent an entire career saying absolutely nothing, okay? So I'm not going to knock Kawhi Leonard for that.
I'm not either. I just wonder what it is. I'm not picking a side here. I don't know what it is, but it's just, you know, they've been extraordinarily successful with Kawhi, well, and even before Kawhi, this is the Popovich way, but it just seems like it's something more than just disagreeing about whether or not he's physically ready to go. You know, I feel like maybe if Kawhi was in a better place mentally or philosophically or psychologically or whatever way with the organization, he might be wanting to come back and play, but right now he doesn't, because it seems like, according to reports, there's more to it.
Yeah, and look, I'm not going to say there isn't, but I think this only gets messy if the Spurs want it to be messy. And I think there is, you know, seeing how Popovich basically said like he would be shocked if he returned this season, I thought was a slight throwing under the bus of Kawhi. I don't know if it really was. It could be interpreted as such. But I think this only gets messy if the Spurs want it to be messy. I think that they understand, unfortunately, like this might be a wasted season of LaMarcus Aldridge and Rudy Gay. But ultimately, I think we all understand, like, this team is probably not good enough at present to beat the Rockets or the Warriors, A. And B, getting Kawhi right is the most important thing. And I think that trumps everything else. And until they do that, then they're better off standing pat and trying to figure out how to make the best of what they currently have.
Good stuff. Eddie, you might see that joining us. Let's get local now and ask you about the Pistons, who start their second half of the season tonight. You know about, obviously, the blockbuster for them prior to the deadline. They actually did it about a week early. But Blake Griffin, early returns were tremendous. They won, I think, four in a row with Blake. And then, of course, they hit the skids and lost three in a row. They finally won one right before the break. They're back tonight. Is this a playoff team in the East? They start tonight, I think, a game and a half out of the final playoff spot. Do you think in the final 20 games or so that the Pistons are a playoff team with Blake Griffin?
I have no idea. I would not want to lie. I have no idea. Like, I'm always going to praise big light-skinned dudes from Oklahoma, seeing that's who I am. So I'm always going to praise Blake Griffin in that way. I think that it'll be interesting to see how Stan Van Gundy continues to utilize what little depth that has, and their issues are not about Drummond and Blake. I think those things are going to take care of themselves. They just have so few guys that either they're waiting on guys like Kennard or Stanley Johnson to take a leap, and they're getting every single thing they can out of players like Reggie Bullock, and God bless Stan Van Gundy for being able to do what he can with what he has. But they're either going to need magical performances from Blake and Drummond every night to scrape to get to the 8 seed, or they're going to need somebody to fall, in my opinion. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, I would bet your house money on Detroit getting to that 8 seed. I don't know if I'd bet my house money, but I bet your house money they do.
Fair enough. Now let me talk about a team that is pretty much set to make the playoffs. The only question is now if they can close a big gap they seem to have between the second and first spots. And, of course, I'm speaking of the Cavs. First loss last night with the new guys. Two really impressive wins on the road when they acquired The four new players, Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, Larry Nance Jr., and Rodney Hood, and dumped all of the other dead weight that was causing, you know, so much discord. But they beat Boston and Oklahoma City before the break. They came back last night and showed that they still have a long way to go. What is the ceiling with these guys for them? Can they, I mean, are they the definitive favorite to go back to the finals now with this group? And secondly, how much do they change about a month from now when Kevin Love, their second-best scorer and probably second-best player, comes back? Because one of these prominent guys is about to lose a lot of playing time.
Yeah, I think there's two facets here. I think one is that, is this team good as the team they had last year? Like, I don't necessarily think, if you just talk about what their peak is, I don't know if they're best. In, at their peak best, they're better than the team that was there last year. However, I think that this team has an ability to be more steady because it's a deeper team that has more options, and it funnels through everything is now funneling through LeBron. And because of that, I think that there's an ability to be steady. However, I also feel like there is an air of predictability with the offense now because there is one singular ball handler in LeBron, and his usage rate is going to be extremely high. And I think this is actually where Love will be interesting, and that Love will be able to be a secondary distributor in the offense and take some of that load off of LeBron as the key ball handler in offensive sets. So, you know, they're still going to have some issues with defense, and Love's integration defensively I think is going to be interesting. But they're in a better place. And I think that they will figure out, definitely for sure, how to manage LeBron's load and figure out how much can Hill take, how much can Clarkson take, how much inevitably can Love take. And then they'll be able to figure out how to leverage Love enough so that defensively they can continue to keep their best defensive front out there. And I think that's actually going to help Tristan and Larry Nance in that way to figure out sometimes I can play the four, sometimes I can play the five versus us having to play small ball basketball all the time. So I think they're going to be okay. I just think that they're going to have to switch up a little bit how predictable they are, because if you know what's coming, I don't care if it's LeBron, the best player in the world, you have a better chance of stopping it if you know what's coming.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the one thing we saw last night, though, especially, you know, late, LeBron scored the Cavs' last 14 points, and all of his buckets were within 6 feet while everybody else was 0 for 10. The predominant number of those shots were threes. Now, you could just say it was an off night, and that's fine. But the what I mean by that is last night proved they need Kevin Love scoring. They need Kevin Love's shooting, and they need him on the floor more than not, because LeBron, you know, is obviously going to get his, and when he needs support, I just don't know if Jordan Clarkson is ready for that yet, simply because he's young. He was playing with the Lakers. Same thing with all these guys were in situations where they haven't been there when big buckets were needed in big leverage moments in playoff type games, whereas obviously Kevin Love has been with LeBron and has won a championship with LeBron and so on and so forth. I just feel like, you know, he may be, you know, the biggest X factor of this entire thing, more so than even any of the four new acquisitions.
I think it's totally possible. And look, and I think we always also kind of run into this trap of, like, you know, we have to, like, overanalyze and hyperanalyze game by game by game.
Sure.
You know, they're going to get better just as a result of going through the season. Now, they're asking them to do it within 20 games, so it's still a lot of it's not a lot of time, but there is time. And I think it'll be interesting to see what Tyronn Lue does. Because invariably, I think he's actually going to have to shorten the roster. I mentioned earlier that they're actually kind of deep. And so to your point, it'll be interesting who they decide whose minutes will get cut, how many of those new four players lose minutes. Because in my opinion, I almost feel like they almost all have to play. And you're starting to see what's happening with guys like Green.
Yeah.
And J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. And I think they all have looked better as well. So the good thing is they've got a cavalcade of options. And it'll be interesting to see whose minutes actually take a sacrifice. Because if I'm being honest, I actually think the person whose minutes are going to get cut a bit is Love, if only because I think that they're going to want to play Love at center only. And unless they play a team like Washington who can play two bigs on the court at the same time, They're going to be playing against a lot of teams that are going to want to play five-out basketball, and Love's only going to be able to play center. And the fact that they have Nance and Tristan as additional options, I think actually works in Cleveland's favor.
I'm going to disagree with you on that. I don't think they can afford to keep him because of his offense off the court as much as you think. But let's move on real quick. The cool story last week, Adam Silver, or actually earlier this week, should say, Adam Silver saying, yeah, we're tinkering, we're thinking, we're talking about it. We've been talking about it for a while, but now maybe we're talking a little bit more about reseeding due to the imbalance of power in the West being much better and deeper than the East. Rather than just letting the best of a weak conference come out and automatically be in the finals, maybe we think about seeding 1 through 16 and getting the two best teams, no matter where they're from, in the finals. Do you like the idea? Question A. Question B is, what do you make of LeBron saying, no, 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 history, man, history, history, tradition, you don't want to mess with that?
LeBron has always been, I'll answer question B first, like, LeBron has always been, like, very peculiar and, like, stodgy about, like, certain things, which, like, I kind of appreciate. He actually reminds, he's starting to veer into, like, old man Kobe territory, where he is kind of crotchety in some of his viewpoints. Which actually makes for a much more entertaining NBA. So I don't make too much of that. I just think that, you know, he started to think about banners and, like, achievements and things like that. And there was a time when having a division title or, you know, being a top seed in a conference really matters. And, like, now you're talking about potentially, like, that stuff not mattering. But the reality is that those are contrived creations in the first place. So we know that it doesn't matter. So I don't pay too much attention to what LeBron said as far as that.
Okay, but hold on. Before you answer question A, my follow-up to that is because you kind of walked right around it, and I wanted to hear you address it. I think he was saying don't mess with it because of tradition, which is silly because the playoff format has changed in so many ways over the last 20 years between series length and everything else, realigning of divisions from conferences to divisions and so on. But you didn't hear in his words, between his lines, man, leave me alone. I get to come out of the East every single year. I make seven straight finals because the East sucks. If you make me play Western teams in the first round, second round, third round, it's going to be a hell of a lot harder. You didn't hear him in between the lines say, don't mess with what I like.
You know what? I will tip my cap. I didn't hear that, but it is an interesting point. The reality might be is that by the time LeBron is done with his career, like by the time those rules get implemented, unless Silver actually quickly, like I don't think it'll have enough time to actually impact him. But that's a valid point. It's a valid point to LeBron, but to the bigger scope of the NBA, it helps the NBA more, and it actually is only singularly against a player like LeBron's strategy. To that point, like, I tip my cap. Like, I think that's a very valid point.
Fair
if
enough.
He said that it's going to affect him next season, then I would actually say that it could potentially impact his free agent decisions coming up in this season.
Now, what about just for the league? Is it the right idea? You know, they would have some travel issues. You know, you might have a first-round matchup of a team on the East Coast playing a team on the West Coast, and they might have some problems with that. But I think that's all very easily manageable by, you know, hell, in the first round, they already play, like, they take 3 days off between games anyway. But the point is it better for the league? You know, if we end up with a finals this year, just for example, that is Warriors versus Rockets, as opposed to a Western Conference finals, and then maybe a less exciting NBA finals.
You know, America is the only country, I believe, that has professional sports where you have these, like, divisions. When I start thinking about, like, professional sports, like, the creation of divisions is largely something that's Americanized. You think about professional soccer, especially the Premier League in Europe, you just have a set up where everybody plays each other twice, once at home and once away. And then that's how the season goes. And so this contrivance of divisions and conferences is wild in some ways. And I think if you're going to just take the best 16 teams, at some point you're going to have a different conversation of how long should our season be and how often should we play. Because, I mean, a league where everybody, you know, alternates year and year, where you get two home games and an away game against all 29 teams, and then the year you flip it and you say, okay, I have to play the Toronto Raptors twice on the road and once at home. But if you say I get to play every team in the NBA three times and you have an 87-game season versus an 82-game season, how much of a difference does that make in season? You might actually have a slight issue as far as rest is concerned with players, but that also means more TV money and then more money for the players and the owners. So to answer the question specifically, like I'm okay with those types of minimal advancements. I don't think that that causes an issue. I would be totally good. I think we'd all acknowledge Warriors and Rockets would be the best finals we could get. And the counter to that, too, is that now you're creating scenarios that if the Cleveland plays the Rockets in the semifinal, you know, you potentially lose that. Or you just make the you actually make the path harder potentially for some team, and you make it easier for some in different scenarios. So, you know, that's the cyclical nature of the league. I think for the best of the league, I think you should always try to make it the best possible at every time. And so I'm here for 16, the best 16 teams making the playoffs.
I like it. I like it too. Especially what really bothers me is in the past couple of years, you've seen a team that's under 500 in the East, for example, going 40-42 and making the postseason ahead of a team that was, you know, say, you know, 51-40. What would that be? How do you get to the rest of it?
51-31 if you're going 51.
That's not what I meant. Like somebody who's like
45-37 or something.
Or 44-38, 45. Right, exactly. So Western teams who get shut out of a playoff berth only because it's harder there. So that's kind of what I want to see go away. Eddie Meissonette, follow him online, sportsfanjournal.com, also Fox Sports contributor as well. It's always a pleasure talking hoops with you and more, my man. Thank you so much.
Y'all be blessed. Thank God it's Friday. Y'all take care.
You got it. Amen to that. Thank God it is Friday. You know what else it means because it's Friday? It means we got the high school basketball games tonight. Look, we had a great high school basketball game last night. Bill Clark is the voice of high school sports in Northwest Ohio. He called that City League Championship game last night. He will call games tonight. We will have Bill Clark coming up with us in just a couple to talk about the matchups in the regular season finales this weekend, as well as the look ahead to sectional matchups next week. And he'll be joining us next as we continue right here on the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5.